So I want to start off by talking about an issue which could have practical relevance nowadays, certainly has from a civil perspective, and that is that at the moment weddings are illegal. You can't get married unless it's exceptional circumstances, which is where one or other of the parties is terminally ill. So I want to wonder how that fits in from a halachic perspective, and it does sometimes come up. I know of one or two cases where people, unfortunately, you know, an engaged couple, one of the couple has been diagnosed with a terminal illness, and they've sometimes, you know, brought the wedding forward. It's the last, you know, the last thing they want to do is to marry their sweetheart. And there's a halakhic question about certain issues as far as that is concerned. So I want to start with a slightly tangential issue, and that is the question of chupat nida. So that is where the kala is not tahora. She is a nida and hasn't yet been able to go to the mikvah. And we're going to see there's a machloket in the poskim about that point. If we look in the Shulchan Aruch in Even HaEzer Simon Mem Dalad Se'if Vav, we will see as follows. That's Simon Mem Dalad Se'if Vav. The Shulchan Aruch says, so if one is makadesh, a woman that one's not allowed to be intimate with, one of the arayot, then it's not valid at all. She'ein kiddushin tosin behen. There's no such thing as kiddushin in that case. If a person gives a ring to his sister and says, hurry up, mekudeshet li b'tabat zu, in the presence of Edim, and says the brachot, etc., etc., there's no question whatsoever. It's not kiddushin whatsoever. No need for a get. Nothing. Chutz mehanida, with the exception of a nida, shamakadesh nida mekadeshet kiddushin gemurin. If you are mekadesh a nida, then that is absolute kiddushin. It's not a question at all. V'ein ra'u la'asot kein, but it's not correct to do so. So why is it not correct to do so? Even though the mechaber is paskening that it's clearly a valid kiddushin, nevertheless, the sheet of the Rambam that we've seen previously is that kiddushin has to be kiddushin ha'ra'u la'bia. Needs to be a kiddushin which one could have, one could be intimate with the kala, and that's the shita of the Rambam in Perek Dalet Hilchot Ishut, that such kiddushin is not valid. So the mechaber paskens that it is valid, but one shouldn't do so. So that is a notion of kiddushin having to be kiddushin haruin lebia. If we look in Simon Samach Aleph Seif Bet in the Ramah at the end of the Siman, so kashat havashelotina se'ad shetitar. Again, the Mechaber says it's correct that a woman shouldn't get married and she'll cease to hora. And the Rama says, "V'achshav haminhag shelo ladak deik ve'im mamtinin mikol makom tov lodi alachatan tchila shehinida." So nowadays we don't worry about it. So the reasons why we don't worry about it, it's kind of interesting. The Achronim say the Achronim say that it's, sorry, Rishonim even say that the reason why we're not so worried about it is because we're Mutei Mispar, there's not many Jews around, and it's difficult to make arrangements for people to get married, and maybe if this person doesn't marry her, then somebody else will marry her, etc., etc. So that's why we do it. But certainly, according to the Mechaber, it would be better not to. And I believe that Sfardim certainly prefer not to. Ashkenazim aren't so worried about it. Sfardim prefer not to in the first instance. But, of course, it's, you know, nowadays, you know, weddings and halls and things are booked, you know, months in advance. You can't be sure if the dates are going to work out. You know, in the old days when things were done, you know, much more locally and at shorter notice, then it was perhaps easier to work out. But nowadays it's not something that we worry about so much. However, look in Se'if Aleph, there in Samach Aleph. If you look in Se'if Aleph in the Ramah again, so the Ramah says, Isha Cholanit. It's about a third of the way down in the Ramah. The Ramah says, Isha Cholanit Cholat Mavet. Simon Samach Aleph, Se'if Aleph. So, Isha Cholanit Cholat Mavet. So, a woman who is deathly ill. Afal Pisha Konsaim Hamitata Chatukupa Kadeshi Yirashena Bala. Even though they might bring her into the chuppah, you know, on her hospital bed, so that the husband should be able to yoresha. Einu chuppah klal is not valid whatsoever. Me'achash eina ru'uya klal lebia, seeing as she's not fit to have bia, ve'ein ba'ala yorsha, and therefore it's not, he's not kona her in any sense. If you look at the Rambam, no, sorry, not the Rambam, the Aruch HaShulchan, in Se'if Yud Chet, the Aruch HaShulchan says that, correct, presume, not necessarily, yeah. Yeah, lichara, the, yeah, there might be another case here. There might be another question here, even with the, in terms of the strict issue to do with, Eina Ru'uya Labia, that's lichara to do with Nisuin. We'll see about the Kiddushin in a moment. Hold fire on that. If you look in the Aruch HaShulchan in Se'if Katan Yud Chet, Se'if Yud Chet, he says, Mikom Akom Einu Moel Afilu Shelonadat Haram, Denahi Delo Ba'inan Chupa HaRu'uya Labia, Mikom Akom Isha HaRu'uya Labia Ba'inan. So even if we hold not like the Rambam, that you can be Mekadesh a woman who's not Ru'uya Labia, nevertheless, even though you can have a case of chupat nida because it's chupah she'ena ru'uya labia, nevertheless, it needs to be with a woman who, at least in principle, could participate in bia. Tahakol yodin kala lama nichnas al chupah, v'kevan she'ena ru'uya labia lo'olam, l'chol ha'poskim ein zu nesua, v'einu tome l'chol ha'nit she'nit b'ebesos simen v'av, t'v'sham ru'uya hi labia. So that's a different case in Nunvav. So this is an important notion. Now in the WhatsApp group, I shared with you something from the Nishmat Avraham. So if you pull that up, the Nishmat Avraham is a an encyclopedia, a commentary on Hilchot refuah related issues, according to the Sager of the Shulchan Aruch. It's five volumes, very important work, worthwhile having. So let's just run through what he's got. So he says, Yishach Olanit, Kotev Asteichem B'Shem Hashem Aryeh, Bachor V'tula Shizminu L'Kanes V'Kuba B'Yom Ploni, V'Kvah Haya Tivcham Tavoach V'Gam Ba'u Kama Anashim Ayaros Acherot L'Chvodam. So you've got a couple, they've got the wedding prepared. V'Yomu Yomayim V'Shem HaKuba Nechla HaKatan B'Choli Gadol Mesukan. Day or two before the wedding, the Chatan comes down with... I suppose now it could be, you know, a serious case of COVID. Chas v'chalila. V'chasu ha'kol ha'atzaot she'lo yechu l'ibud v'akvot ha'orchim. So nowadays we would say the reason why the couple want to get married is for romantic reasons. In those days it was, you know, well, we've already booked the caterer and bought all the food. It's a pity to let it go to waste. We may as well get married so that everybody can enjoy the party. So they slapped the chatan in, propped him up, and were made a chuppah. So the Shem Aryeh says, if I'd been involved with this, lo hayiti menicham lasot kein, I would never have agreed to this. Diyesh chashas mitzad hadin, to have a chuppah she'ina ru'uli abia. Because this is a chuppah that is not ru'u yalabea. Dishacholat mavet shichnisuha l'chuppah v'meita. In habal yoshad to have a chuppah she'ina ru'u yalabea. V'ein l'chalek ben isha l'ish. Doesn't think there's any reason to make a distinction between a man and a woman. It's true that in the case that the Rama is talking about, the woman died. In this case, the husband recovered. If he dies, then certainly it wouldn't be a valid wedding. In which case, you know, why are you saying the Shema Brachot? Befrat b'cholim sukan after rov cholim l'chayim in kol makom ein lasot kein l'chatchila. You certainly shouldn't be making the brachot. V'od hakaz banim tiknu l'palel shelo tavona benot Yisrael l'dei chalitza v'tiru get shchiv merab alay l'mechashash there. We've got certain takanot that Chazal made. They were very, you know, worried about, you know, the notion they didn't want to women to be in situations where they're going to have to do chalitza, and, you know, they always, you know, they would allow a get shchiv merah, get from a person who's on their deathbed to be executed at night, even though in some places they never gave a get at night. So you don't want to, you know, if the husband dies a week after the wedding, the wife is going to need chalitza in the future. You don't put, you know, you always try and avoid chalitza. Don't put yourself, you know, in a situation where you're going to have to do a chalitza. You know, you know, if a man's on his deathbed and can avoid chalitza by giving a get, you know, in a certain sense we do that. So, kal vachomer, not to put yourself into a situation like that. So that's the Shem Aryeh. This has already been discussed with somebody who's got everything ready for the wedding and they've had the Ufra of Shabbat. V'yom alef chala choli gadol, v'yeh choli holeichu chasek, v'nevuchu krovav, im lachnitzo eitzel hakala, amidah sheish basmicha, v'lel hachupa lo baileha, sheosif choliav, v'gavar ashikimat higiel yot goseis, v'karov litjeish min harachamim. And the whole question, what they, should they, you know, bring the chatan, you know, prop him up under the chuppah so he can be Mekadesh, his wife, he's at death's door. V'shalu laharav, im yamut, im tizkar kala be'ikav tosefet. So they ask, you know, if he does die, was this a valid wedding that the kala is entitled to all the terms of reference in the ketubah? V'loiv reif reif al hamas, eshalo haya ra'u l'hachnisol l'chupah. And the Mahari Ayish never said that they shouldn't have got married, just discussed whether or not You know, she's she gets her ketubah settlement. You know, you can do it. The implication is you can do it if everything, if they're happy with it. Seeing as most people do get better, so you can hope and pray for the best. So the Shem Aryeh is making a distinction between Chupat Nida, where there's an Issa which is preventing the bia, and this case where there's a chole, a physical thing which is presenting the bia. In Yitzelach Bol Batzmo Rashai. So, you know, this is a lesser case, because if a person wants to put themselves through such a traumatic situation and to try and be boel, then they could. So the suggestion is that no, it is a valid chuppah, because it's chuppah ha-ru'uya l'biya. Umam shechastei chemed, uvahamunutei demar yesh lepakbek divrei kodsho. Chad b'may demashmelei demar she'eno ra'u machmat isu mikre eno ra'u tfei, mimar she'eno ra'u machmat metziut ha'inyan. So the stei chemed is not sure which is a worse situation. The Shem Aryeh suggested that the worst situation is where you've got a halachic impediment to bia, because there's no way you can get round that, as opposed to a physical impediment to bia, where in theory you could perhaps overcome it. Whereas the Steich Hemed is saying, makes sense, possibly, or at least to suggest, that the opposite is true. That perhaps the opposite is true, and that a physical impediment is worse than a halachic impediment. A halachic impediment, soon as she goes to the mikveh, she's ru'uya l'biya. Whereas a physical impediment, you know, maybe he'll be like this for all his life. But in dechol she'enu ra'u ba'atzmo, aval mashe ba'atzmo ra'ui, va'arye di'isura hu d'rav ya'alei, lo mikre enu ra'u l'biya. That it makes sense to say that there's a difference between, if you like, something intrinsic to the person and something external to the person. Choli is intrinsic to the person, whereas a halachic impediment is external to the person. V'chein heveti b'kuntres ha'klalim, that's the stechemet. Right at the bottom, Hari Dumasha Inu Ra'ui Machmat Isur killed Fay. Vod Babai Shita Lady Nunsel Chabol Bazmo Rashai. Sarichiundim of Farash Pedivere Rambam Hilchot Kavolim Mazik. Asolach Bol Bazmo. You can't say if a person wants to, you know, do beer with his last drop of energy that he's got in him, that he's allowed to. You're not allowed to put yourself in a life-threatening situation. Also, I would add to what the Steich Hemed has said, is it's not so poshut that a person who's that ill, you know, can just summon up the muster the strength to be Boel. I would suspect that a person who's that ill couldn't do that. He's lost Gvurat Anashim. He couldn't do it. So he's physically, it's not just that he's too weary, he's physically incapable. Precedent in the story of Rut and Boaz. Right. Fine. So there's your answer. There's your answer. Nobody says an elderly person is not allowed to get married. So it seems that the Steich Hemed is not so keen on it. And there's discussion in the poskim about certainly about a person who hasn't got gvurat anashim, a person who's impotent and unable to consummate the marriage or enter into a physical relationship, even if the woman is satisfied with that that arrangement. But it seems, according to many achronim at least, that that's not a valid kiddushin at all. And this is, Yisrael, what I was said I'd touch on, you know, a few moments back, in terms of there they say it might fall into the category of mekach taot, even if it's not mekach taot, you know, if the kala's aware of it. But you know, it could still be that, you know, certainly if the kala thinks that okay, he's going to get better. You know, and then they'll be able to have a relationship. But he doesn't get better, then it could certainly be the whole kiddushin from the outset falls into question. Besides the question of the nisuin, and then this very much comes up. This could have been cases so much so, you know, in COVID. Kala shechalta betzahevet be'erev hachatuna. So you could have a case, you know, where, you know, the day of the wedding, the kala comes down, you know, last March, you know, where people were, you know, getting it left, right and centre. You could have a case, you know, the kala comes down with COVID, the morning of the wedding, or the afternoon of the wedding. You know, she gets this, she's got this temperature and everything. So they say, quickly, you know what, we're going to just do the chuppah with a minyan, and we'll they won't be at the dinner and whatever. You know, but they can't even touch each other because he's frightened of catching COVID from her. It's not a problem. Because that's the din of a kala shepirsa nida before they've consummated the marriage. But that's you know, an interesting point that comes up there. So it would seem that certainly in terms of the chuppah, you know, besides the kiddushin issue, but certainly even if the kiddushin itself is not a problem, certainly the chuppah would be a problem if the woman is terminally ill, but we'll discuss that in just one moment, certainly if the chatan is, but it might be, you know. It's not so posh, because if the woman, let's say, you know, the woman's she's very ill, but she's got 6 months still to live, so she can still have beer. Then lichora it wouldn't be a problem. Whether it would be a good thing or a bad thing, you know, I'd think each case has got to be, you know, addressed on its own merits. You know, I sort of wondered sometimes about, you know, does it fit in with the Jewish idea of what marriage and kiddushin is? You know, is it, you know, is the Jewish idea of marriage and kiddushin, is it, you know, the goal is that a couple should be able to live together and build a home together, or is it just an expression of, you know, of romance? You know, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how it fits in as far as that is concerned. But certainly the case is... I don't know what one would look at to try and make a determination. I mean, you know, we don't have, you know, we don't have any models, you know, in, as far as I'm aware, you know, in Chazal and in the Rishonim of people getting married, you know, for romantic reasons, where there's no possibility of building a home together. You know, the only models we have are to the contrary, in the sense that, you know, the halakha that a person who's lived with his wife for 10 years, you know, and hasn't been able to have children, you know, he has to be megarisha. Right, was right, yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, also, you know, the Gerushin after 10 years, I mean, that might just be a din in Priya Varivya. And here, okay, so, you know, she's going to die in 6 months. So, you know, he'll be Mekayim Priya Varivya later. I suppose it depends, perhaps, in part on what we discussed, you know, in the very first year. The whole question about whether, you know, Kiddushin is a mitzvah or a matir. In terms of, is there a mitzvah independently that a person should be mekadesh a woman, or is it that no, if a couple wants to live together, so then they have to go through kiddushin. If it's the latter, then you know maybe it's you know this type of marriage wouldn't fall you know far from that. If it's the former, maybe it would fall further from that. That's not to say it would be osa, and obviously, you know, you're dealing with, you know, people's feelings and emotions at, you know, the most fragile time in their existence. You know, so it's hard to say, but one needs to be careful what one says and how one says it. But, you know, sort of just flagging it up as a machshavti, you know, question whether, you know, if a couple came to one in the first instance and asked, listen, you know, this is what we're thinking of doing, you know, is Ruach HaChamim Nochahim Menu? I suspect not. If a couple comes and says, this is what we're doing, we're members of your shul and you're contracted to be Masadeh Kiddushin for us, I don't think there's any issa in it. But it seems like the types of cases that the government are talking about, you know, where you could have a wedding under exceptional circumstances, you know, we've seen in the news, you know, cases like this where, you know, people have been, you know, got married in their hospital beds, that would seem to be halakhically problematic. Yeah, if they've got COVID, it seems they can still get married. Just be careful. don't stay in too much too close contact with each other. But min hadin it's permissible. Just one moment. Okay, I want to move on now. So again, a point that I said that we'd touch on fleetingly, and that's to do with the Eidim for the Kiddushin. If anybody here is going to be Masadeh Kiddushin, this is one of the areas that you've got to be really on top of, making sure that your Eidim are kasherim. And this comes up. This is really much more of a Choshen Mishpat issue than an Even HaEzer issue. And there are two primary ways in which a person can be invalid as an aid. Either Machmat Kirva, meaning that they're related either to each other or to the Chatan or Kala, or Machmat Avira, or that they're transgressors, and therefore invalidated as Eidim. So we can't go through all the details here properly, but at least we can flag up a couple of points so that it should be on your radar. So the first thing I would say to you, just in terms of, you know, hadracha for practical rabbinics, is whenever you're being Masadeh Kiddushin, find out in advance who your Eidim are. Again, there are two different types of weddings that you tend to have. There's non-frum people and frum people. Non-frum people, they don't know anything about the Eidim. So you just need to make sure that you're going to have you know, valet edim at the chuppah. If you're there, then you're obviously one of them. But occasionally it can happen that you've got a chuppah somewhere, and you know, you've asked around, then no frum guests coming. There's no chazan or anything. Nobody frum there. You're going to have to make sure that you've got a suitable aid. You might have to bring somebody with you to fulfil that role. But you should always, if it's a frum wedding, so then, you know, very often they'll say, you know, we want to have so-and-so and so-and-so as our edim, and that's all well and good, but it's kedai to check, you know, as to who these people are, and that they do tick the relevant boxes. So what are those relevant boxes? So let's look at Simon Lamed Gimel. We're only going to look at the first couple of Se'ifim. It's 18 Se'ifim here. We're not going to go through all 18, but we're just going to sort of establish some principles here. So, Kol ha'psulim la'adun psulim la'ed, chutz me'ohe v'sonei shek she'im la'ed, afa pishep psulim la'din. So, okay, that's nothing to do. Choshen mishpat, simen lamed gimel, se'if aleph. So, se'if aleph isn't talking about psulei kurva. Let's look at se'if bet. Eilu he'ra psulim. Ha'achim ze'im ze'. So, if the chatan tells you he's got a very frum brother and he'd like his brother to be the aide, no, doesn't work. Bein min ha'ein, bein min ha'av. Whether he's a full brother or a half brother. Harei heim rishon barishon. Now this is the important principle that we need to apply. I'll try and share with you a diagram, if I can find where I put my diagram. But this is what we call Rishon Barishon, meaning these are both the same generation, and they're on the same level. So they're both the first generation from their father. They're Rishon Barishon, and they can't be aiding for each other. Uvenehem Zem Zeh Sheni B'Sheni. And their children, who are first cousins with each other, are what we call Sheni B'Sheni, meaning they're both second generation from the shared ancestor. So the shared ancestor is Avraham. The Rishon Barishon is Yitzchak and Yishmael. And then the Sheni B'Sheni is Yaakov and Yishmael's children. So that's the Sheni B'Sheni. Sheni B'Sheni is also problematic. Uvenei v'neihem, zeim zeh. And also, the next generation down is also going to be problematic. That is Shlishi Bashlishi. That is third generation with third generation. So the great grandson of Avraham with, or the grandson, if you like, the grandson of Yitzchak with the grandson of Yishmael. That will be Shlishi Bashlishi. Ulaolam Shlishi Barishon Kasher. Now, Shlishi Barishon is going to be kosher. What do we mean, Shlishi Barishon? So, I don't know if you can see this diagram. I don't know if you can see it that I put together. You've got the first generation, Rishon Barishon, is what I think I've called X and Y. Sheni Basheni is what I've called A and B. And Shlishi Bashlishi is what I've called C and D. So Shlishi Barishon is going to be permissible, because that's sort of got to travel a long way. Or if you like, it's four steps removed. It's once across, or three steps removed. Once across, once down, and another time down. So that is kasher. Ololam Shlishi Barishon kasher. Ve'in tzarech lomar Shlishi Basheni. And certainly, Shlishi Bashing, who I've got here, C with B. Okay, because there, it's had to travel, if you like, all the way up, all the way round and round like that, as it were. So it's not a close relationship. Aval Sheni B'Sheni, Vein Tarek Lomar Sheni Barishon Shneim B'Sulim. So cousins, first cousins, will be invalid because you haven't got enough of a gap between them. They're the same, they're too close, if you like, too close for comfort. Lefichach, Ha'avim ben benor pasul, so a father with his grandson will be pasul, mipnei sha'avuv no rishon barishon, because a father's relationship with his son is obviously the same as his relationship with his brother, meaning they're rishon barishon. Kamo achvachiv, v'im ben beno, v'im ben beno, but with his great grandson, shehu ravim imenu kasher, but a great grandson, which is fourth generation from the shared ancestor, kasher, mifneshu shlishi barishon, because that's a case of shlishi barishon, so it's far enough removed. So we're not going to go through all the, all the questions, but this is essentially the question that you have to ask yourself: is it a shlishi barishon relationship, or is it a closer relationship with that? Various of the Kitsurim books, Hilchot Nisuin, those sorts of books, give a list of all the prohibited relatives. But it's worth flagging up, it's not only blood relatives, it will also include in-laws, and it will also include certain step-relatives. So, for example, a person's stepfather, okay, would be problematic, or would be osa. So stepfather is also going to be prohibited as an aid. Your person's wife's father, or wife's stepfather, for that matter, you know, will also be prohibited. So, you know, any time you hear that there's a relative, then you've got to get worried about it. Your father's your grandmother's husband, would be prohibited. Your great grandfather is prohibited, etc., etc. So great grandfather should be shlishi barishon. The achronim also include a great grandfather. I'm just the end of the mechaber there. He says v'yesh omrim to shlishi barishon pasul. V'chein ra'u l'horot. V'yesh omrim de'enor pasul ra'mid rabbanan. So great-grandparents, or great-grandchildren, it's a question whether it's mutter or not. So basically what you have to do is you always have to, anytime there's any sort of relation, is it related, alarm bells need to go. You need to check it out. The minhag is that we don't have relatives, even if it's third cousin, that we don't have relatives, because it's too easy to make mistakes, and that's brought down in the various halachas farim. That's the minhag. But sometimes you haven't got a choice. Sometimes, you know, you're at a wedding where, you know, the only person who's shomer Shabbat besides yourself is a cousin's husband. Cousin's husband would still be problematic. A second cousin's husband. Right, so yeah, normally speaking, you wouldn't want to do that. But if you have to, so then you can. So that's important to flag up as far as that's concerned. So always, if it's relatives involved, you need to check it out carefully to make sure that you haven't got problems there. Now, if you go on to Siman Lamed Dalet, the next Siman in Shulchan Aruch, deals with the question of Edim Hapsulim Machmat Aveira. So if we look in the Shulchan Aruch tells us, Rasha Pasul Le'edut. This is Midoraita. V'afilu Eid Kasheh She'yodem Chaveroshu Rasha V'ein HaDayanim Makirim Risho Asolo La'edimo Afal Pishehi Eidut Emet. So even if what the Eid is saying is true, I mean, this is a Beit Din case, this isn't talking particularly about Eidut Kiddushin, where it's a different type of Eidut, but the principle is still the same. So you're not allowed to give edut with a rasha, and you're not allowed to accept such edut. So the question is, what's the definition of a rasha? Eze rasha kol shavar aveira shechayevim aleha malkut. Person eats chasa. Certainly that. So Chilul Shabbat definitely makes you pass on Le'edut. Lo shana im avar le'teavon, lo shana im avar le'hachis. And even if you were over Aveira Shein Bar Malkut, it's pass on Midrabanan. Now, having said that, though, there are still certain, questions in terms of the Shulchan Aruch goes through a whole load of examples of various sorts of cases where a person will be regarded as an avarian as far as this is concerned. But there are questions as well. If you just a moment. If you look in to bring to your attention Sif Yud Zayin, look at Sif Yud Zayin and Yud Chet. So these are big questions. Mishein olo b'mikra v'lo b'nishma v'lo b'derech eretz. So you've got a person who doesn't know anything, really. He doesn't know, he can't learn a pasuk of Chumash, he doesn't know any Mishnah, he doesn't know Derech Eretz, he's sort of a strange person. Ela im kein hechazik she'osek b'mitzvot u'bimut chasadim v'noheg b'tarche yisharim v'yesh bo derech eretz. Afal pishuram ha'aretz v'einu lo b'mikro v'lo b'mishnah. So nimseit omer, kol tamid chacham b'cheskat kasher, ad she'i pasel, chol am ha'aretz b'cheskat she'u pasul, ad she'i chazik she'olek b'tarche yisharim. So basically we say that anybody who's a tamid chacham, anybody who's a scholar, we assume they're kasher le'edut, unless we've got evidence to the contrary. Anybody who's not a scholar, we tend to assume that they're pasul le'edut, unless we've got evidence that they're what one would say is an erlechayid. If they behave in a good, nice way, and they osek b'mitzvot, g'muluk chasadim, v'nohei b'darchei sharim. So they've got a sense of responsibility to society. Obviously, we're talking about they seem to be mitzvah observant. So then we'll assume that they're kasher. Now, obviously, there's certain grey areas where what exactly is the definition of a person who is ein lo derech eretz? What about a person who sort of seems frum, but you're not quite so sure how frum he is. Go on to the next halacha as well. If you chet abuzim, psulim le'edut midivrehem. Abuz is an uncouth type of person. People who sit on the tube eating their burgers. or their falafel and making a mess and a smell all over the place. People who go through, you know, walk through, on the promenade, in just shorts and flip flops, you know, without a shirt on in the summer. We assume these people, they don't have moral scruples. It's kind of interesting. Nowadays, one might argue that just because a person walks on Bournemouth Promenade in August without his shirt on, doesn't necessarily mean to say that the person hasn't got a good sense of Emmet and Sheker. Maybe this person is fine, upright, upstanding. But the assumption is, if he's a lifeguard, it'll be different. But the assumption is, and, you know, it could be that the halakha is stereotyping in some sense, but the assumption is that such people can't be relied on to be truthful. Now, this issue of anashim hasholchim ochlim b'shuk, this is discussed in some of the achronim. You know, what about a person, I saw in a tshuva a while back, since the person who eats standing up at a reception is pasul le'edut, because that's regarded as holchim v'ochlim b'shuk. So I don't know if, I'm sure that's not muskam l'chol ha'dayot. It might depend a little bit on societal norms. In the society that we live in, I think, you know, that's anashim mechubadim, you know, eat at receptions. That's that's a certain type of food. It's reception food, and you know, in high class society, you'll have receptions. Whereas perhaps in other contexts, then one wouldn't do that. One of the points discussed, though, in the Achronim, and you know, there seem to be different approaches about this in terms of whether, you know, these are, you know, descriptive or prescriptive, you know, considerations. Meaning, is it say, you know, is the Shulchan Aruch telling us that, well, a person who eats at a reception, you know, is by definition, you know, they're, you know, a person who's trustworthy wouldn't eat at a reception. Or is it just descriptive that, you know, in those days, you know, and again, it's not, one can argue that there's a difference between ochlim bashuk and eating at a reception. You know, ochlim bashuk, that's why the example I gave, you know, is a person who sits on the train, you know, that person with the smelly burger. You know, that's a person who's bazui. It's a person who, you know, has a picnic on the summer's day, you know, in Regent's Park. Is not necessarily a bazui person. The other question is, why do we assume that an Am Haaretz is pasul le'edut? So it could be for one of two reasons. It could be that we just assume that such a person doesn't have a finely honed sense of right and wrong, or true and false. Or the other possibility is that no, a person who's an Am Haaretz is likely to be an Avarian. And there we've got the question in terms of if a person, you know, does a person need to be aware that what he's doing is an Aveira, or do we say that, no, if he's fine and upstanding, even though he's an Am Haaretz, then we assume that, you know, yeah, okay, he doesn't, can't learn a sugya, but he knows what's mutter and what's asa. But if he's not fine and upstanding, then we just assume, well, because he doesn't know much, you know, he's bound to be doing things which are wrong. And one of the big questions in the poskim is, you know, what we say about, you know, things which, you know, everybody does, and people don't realize the chumrat ha'isur. So one of the questions discussed by the earlier achronim, 200 years ago, is, you know, what about people who shave with a razor? Now, that was widespread, and it seems that people didn't really, either they didn't know that shaving with a razor was asa, or even if they knew that it was asur, nevertheless, they didn't really appreciate the chumrat asur. They just thought that it was something which, very frum people didn't do, but that it was, you know, a bit like not putting on Rabbeinu Tam to fill in, or something like that. It's not really something which applies to everybody. So those are the questions, and you know, the question whether or not you need to put, to encourage the Edim to do teshuvah before they, before they act as Edim, and you know what that really means, whether we can say that a person's doing teshuva, you know, unless we've got evidence that they've adopted a new lifestyle. So those are sort of, again, I'm just, you know, flagging up the issues, but one of the questions that often comes up, in if you look through the responsa literature in terms of cases of igun and mamzerut, one of the first questions that comes up, well, is there a way of passing the first kiddushin on the grounds of the fact that the edim weren't frum? So if you can demonstrate the edim weren't shomrei shabbat, so maybe that's a way of dealing with it. But it can be a bit of a double-edged sword, because the poskim discuss from, sometimes they want it both ways, as it were, in terms of they discuss the question of what if the edim, turned out one of the edim was pasul, say a karov, they didn't realize one of the edim was a karov. Many of the achronim discuss this. One of the edim was a karov. Was it a valid kiddushin, or do they have to have another kiddushin? So the Chatam Sofer said that there are plenty of other people in the room who saw what was happening. So therefore, you've got other edim. So firstly, that leads into the whole question whether you're supposed to say Atem Edai, that you are the sole edim, in which case then everybody else isn't the edim. But also, sometimes you want to puzzle the edim on the ground, you know, so that you can say there's no need for a get, or that a person's not a mamzer. And of course, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, everybody else in the room counts as an aid if I want it to be a valid kiddushin, but doesn't count as an aid if I don't want it to be a valid kiddushin. So Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about the case where, you know, everybody in the congregation is, is mechallel Shabbat. It's a reform wedding. Nobody there's from at all. But you know, these are points which are discussed. So what I've attached, one of the handouts that I shared with you, we won't go through it together, is a tshuva of from Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger, who's the Rav of Gilo, and a Dayan in Yerushalayim, very voluminous posek. So he discusses the question of, what's the definition of Edim Kesherim, whether you can have, a person who doesn't wear a kippah, but seems to be frum, whether or not they can be counted as an aid kiddushin or not. And he brings Tzadim Lekan Ulekan, in terms of if a case where the person, he doesn't wear a kippah, but it seems to be a frum person, and we've got no aid to the contrary. And this is, part of the discussion. Do we assume that a person is frum unless we have aid to the contrary, or vice versa? So here the question is where, the person, generally behaves like a frum person, but for whatever reason doesn't wear a kippah out in the street. Definitely, definitely. Right. He's addressing it the nowadays. He's also, interestingly, he's addressing it in Eretz Yisrael. Even so, it's very interesting. He says that there, you know, one can develop a shita to say that it's valid. I would say there's a big difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. Eretz Yisrael, I think very few people who are properly frum don't wear a kippah. You know, a person who davens, or doesn't eat food without saying a bracha, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, you know, I think wears a kippah. I don't think you have people who, you know, are very makpid, you know, on all halachot, but don't wear a kippah. In Chutz La'aretz, you still do, because there are still people who, for whatever reason, feel uncomfortable in the workplace, you know, not wearing a kippah. So, you know, I could see a distinction there. The final thing I wanted to look at, again, which is part of this question, you know, is a tshuva of the Rishon Tzion, Rav Yitzchak Yosef, where he discusses this very question about a person who's Mechalel Shabbat Befarhesia. Now, it would seem quite straightforward to say that Mechalel Shabbat Befarhesia is obviously no good as an aid, and therefore it's not valid kiddushin, and this is what a lot of achronim want to say. You know, if you can demonstrate that the aidim were mechallel Shabbat, then you've got nothing to talk about. He doesn't see it so straightforward, because he discusses the whole question of tinok shenishba. That's tinok shenishba. Doesn't have the usual or all of the disabilities that a non-observant Jew would necessarily have. So he takes issue with what Rav Vosner, Shevet Halevi, said. Rav Vosner maintained that no, you can't. You know, if a person lives in Israel, and you know the notion of Tinok Shenishba wasn't pioneered by the Chazon Ish, but it was certainly championed by the Chazon Ish. Rav Vosner said, a person lives in Israel and is, you know, lives, you know, there's a shul in town, there are frum people around, then you can't say the person's a Tinok Shenishba, but they don't know anything about Jewish observance. Rav Yitzchak Yosef disagrees and says, no, the fact there are frum people around, you know, if you've grown up in a secular environment in Israel, the fact that, oh, okay, you know that there are people who believe in keeping Shabbat and people who believe in God, etc., etc., that's not necessarily going to influence you at all, and that won't stop you being Tinok Shenishba. So he doesn't want immediate, it's an interesting tshuva, he doesn't want immediately to say that you can be you can be makel on the basis of tinok shenishba. So that you can makel on the basis of mechallel Shabbat farhesia, because he thinks they might be tinok shenishba, but he certainly sorry for it as a tzad lahakel b'makom igun. So okay, there's I'm sure we could have had another 20 shiurim on Hilchot Nisuin v'Kiddushin, but we're not going to.